Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. It is a Thursday. We are efforting a guest, but first, Kyle Porter will join me. We'll talk about some more OSU basketball. Kyle, what's going on, man?
Not much. It seems to be the guest we're trying to get is actually probably not going to talk OSU basketball, so we'll try to get it in for a few minutes while we can here.
Yeah, that'd be refreshing, though, to not talk about Fire Ford or Doug Home.
Yeah, it would. It's getting... If you and I are getting tired of it, then I know everybody else is as well.
I'm not tired of it, but maybe our listeners are. I don't know. Yeah. We try to spice it up a little bit.
Well, I wanted to talk about – let's talk about me. You know, let's talk about this.
Yeah, it's all about you, Kyle.
What I've done. No, I wrote a post on Thursday, just kind of some random thoughts that I've been having about the OSU basketball head coaching position. What did you – you said you read it. What did you agree with, disagree with? First of all, what did you disagree with that I wrote?
Well, I think I do agree with you that winning almost isn't the most important thing. It is kind of rebuilding the fan base and filling Gallagher Iva back up. I guess I'm a little, just to play devil's advocate, I do wonder if just the fact that Doug is coaching the team, the place would be totally full again. I think there's a little bit of chicken and the egg where you got to at least win and not look, you know, horrible, which I don't think Doug would do that, but... You know, Sean Sutton was an OSU guy, and the place was a mausoleum his last year. So I think winning more than anything will fill Gallagher Iba up. But that was kind of – I didn't disagree with you. Just the devil's advocate side of that is, well, he kind of has to win too, not just because he played at OSU.
No, you're right. And I think that we – you and I especially because we're sort of close to it. And I don't know. Twitter and social media is not a good representation of, like, reality. And so – it's almost like I feel like I sort of overstate, or maybe I did overstate how excited I feel like 13,000 people would be, because that's how many you need to fill it up. So I think you're right. I think that I sort of overstated that a little bit, but generally my point was just that you gotta get somebody that's gonna excite to. I mean it. If the thing's a crapshoot, and it is, unless you hire Bill Self, and if you need money, then the logical thing is to find somebody that will fill it up no matter if they win or not at the beginning, and that leads us to Doug Gottlieb.
Right, and that's the part I really agree with, because as you and I have talked about before, just hiring the assistant from Kansas, like, that's not going to do it. You know, like, there's... And one of the main things you wrote that I totally agree with is everyone's a crapshoot. Yeah. There's no sure things here.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want to get at least the crapshoot that will get that side of things rolling again?
Yeah.
So I think that was a good point in your column.
It's hard, though. I mean, it's Mike Holder. I don't envy the position that he's in. You know, it's a difficult
decision. It's tough. Yeah.
It's a hard decision, because no matter what you decide, you're going to have – I mean, out of the three decisions that you have in front of you, don't fire Ford and hire Gottlieb, or fire Ford and hire somebody else. You're gonna have a portion of OSU fans, or even season ticket holders, that are upset, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't. I mean, the only way you can solve everything is by firing Ford and hiring Bill Self, I think.
I do, in a weird way, I think this is a great thing for Mike Holder, the whole Doug Gottlieb thing. I think in a way it's a get out of jail free card, because if there's a whole fan base wants to hire Doug, who has no experience, and it fails, well, it's kind of the fans' fault. That's who they wanted, and he's giving the fans what they want. He can almost sell it that way. If you were to go hire another, you know, go hire Brad Underwood, and he pulls a Travis Ford for 8 years or 7 years, I think that almost would put, like, just so much pressure on him, it wouldn't even be funny. I think the whole Doug movement, I think, kind of gives Holder an out in a way with the fan base. Do you agree?
Yeah, a little bit, but you can't, as the leader of an organization, start. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Like, the season ticket holders are essentially your shareholders if you're running a company, and so you're basically just saying, hey, give the people what they want. Like, this is what you wanted. And but at the same time, like, you're still held accountable for that organization. You're still held accountable for what happens with that organization, so you can't just start letting, for lack of a better term, the inmates run the asylum.
Yeah, and I don't. He wouldn't hire Doug just because of the fan movement. He would hire him for all the reasons, you know, we've talked about, and all the reasons Doug kind of laid out when he was on our podcast. But the notion that the fans want it could only help him, I think, in making the hire. But another thing I agreed with you with completely, and this is something you and I and Matt Emilian were texting about the other day, was the expectation factor. That your expectation is to play for a chance to go to the Sweet 16 just about every year, correct?
Yes, on and average.
I don't think that's basically what Eddie did for 15, 16 years, which I know Eddie's the gold standard. I know Eddie's not coming back, but for a job that I kind of view as, you know, upper echelon in the Big 12, top three, top four, whatever you want to put it, I don't think that's far-fetched at all. Yeah. I think that is the goal. And more than anything, Kyle, it's the Big 12. Like, the Big 12 finish to me is just as important.
Yeah.
Like, you have to compete in your league or else what are you doing? Like, I think you should at least finish in the top half, win the league, you know, once every 3-4 years. I don't think that's asking too much. I mean, it's hard to beat Kansas. True. They've won it 12 years in a row. But I don't think that's far-fetched. And I think that really is the lifeblood of what the expectations are. Finish in the top half of the league, win your first round game, and then you've met pretty much what the fans should expect.
Well, and there's a randomness to the tournament that can't be accounted for. It's, you know, every once in a while you're going to be a 5 seed and get a 12 seed in Oregon that should have been like a 6 seed or whatever. Like, I don't think it's fair to hold one game or two games against a coach. And so I think you're right in that it's almost like the league thing is even more important, because that's not a random thing. That's 18 games every year. You figure out who the best teams are. And that hadn't been pretty for Travis Ford. And so, yes, the postseason thing matters. But and this is where I disagree with Barry Trammell. He was talking about, you know, if Oklahoma State would have gone deeper in the tournament a few times. I kind of disagree a little bit. I mean, that would help, yes, but they've not been a good Big 12 team for 8 years now. They've had their moments. They've had their seasons, one or two of them. But generally, on average, they're not a very good Big 12 team.
I disagree with Barry, too, on that. Like, and for me, the whole expectation thing has changed. Before, back in the day, if you made a bowl game, you were a good football team, right? Well, if you make a bowl game now, you're just not horrible. Like, you can have a losing record and get into a bowl game.
Yeah, Nebraska was like 5-7, weren't they?
Right. And same, too, goes with the NCAA tournament. The old standard used to be, well, if you get 20 wins, you're in. If you have a 500 record in conference, you're in. Well, now Ford's getting in with a losing record in conference play. So don't give me he made the tournament. Yeah. Like, you go 8-10 in the Big 12, you make the tournament. Like, that should not be the standard in which you should keep your jobs. Oh, well, he made the tournament. Well, he didn't compete for the league, and he had a losing record. So am I supposed to be impressed with that? Like, I think that a lot of the old standards are being used when people prop up the fact that Ford has made the tournament.
Well, again, expectations. If your expectation is only to make the tournament every year, no matter how it happens, then Ford's been successful. But one of the reasons I would love to talk to Mike Holder, either on this podcast or just a one-on-one interview or whatever. I'm very curious to know what his expectation is for not only the Oklahoma State basketball program, but also the football program. What is your expectation? I mean, kind of famously, his expectations for the Oklahoma State golf program were, when he was the coach, ludicrously high. I mean, just you talk to Bo Van Pelt, you talk to Charles Howe, you talk to any of those guys that used to play for him, their stories of his expectation for them was preposterous. And as a result, he had great teams. He built a great program. So I would be really fascinated to know. And you got to balance expectations with, you know, what you can afford as an organization, as an athletic program. But I'm curious to know what his expectations are for football and basketball.
That's interesting. Well, you know what? We can ask Mike McGraw what his expectations are for golf.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he cut the cord on his, you know, his protege, right?
Yeah.
That's how high his expectations were for golf. So I don't know. I think what Mike Holder's I'm just speculating here. I think it would be fill your arena, graduate all your kids, and compete for Big 12 championships. I think that's his standard. I think the only reason Ford's been there, and we all know, is because of his contract. I think Mike Holder would have much higher expectations of basketball, especially since when they made it to the Final Four, that's when he really, like, I don't want to say stuck it to the fans, but he really jacked the prices up. Like, my dad was a season ticket holder during that time. You had to start paying a massive donation just to keep your seat. Like I said, we've mentioned before, their ticket prices are up there with Kansas,
yeah,
as far as the price scale. So I think he views it as a business, and I think he wants, you know, obviously the demand to be at its peak for those arenas and those season tickets. And more than anything, he's an OSU guy. He just wants to see OSU win.
Yeah.
And I thought you brought up a good point. Speaking of finances, your dad offered a few
scenarios, good solutions. I liked it.
Grandpa Pistols coming through.
Yeah, it was big time. One of them was deferring Mike Gundy's new contract, whenever that is, whenever it takes place, deferring some of that upfront money to when he's retired, and so that it's taxed at a lower rate. It's kind of a win-win for both parties. I'm not totally sure that Mike Gundy would actually agree to that, but I thought that was really interesting.
I doubt it.
Yeah, but and I actually want to talk about Mike Gundy here in a second. But the other was, I think, even more creative and probably more interesting. But just attaching an incentive to whoever the next coach is, and you're in such a unique situation in which you have this arena that's empty, but could sort not easily be filled, but we've seen it filled in the not so distant past. It's not like Texas, where for the past 20 years you haven't really been able to fill up the Irwin Center. You should be able to fill up Gallagher Arena to an extent. And so his plan was, you know, give whoever the next coach is a base salary of $500,000, $700,000, whatever, and then an extra $10 for every season ticket sold, I think is what he said. And so you're maxing out at I think it was over $2 million if you sell the thing out, which is, that's really, I mean, that's probably a Doug Gottlieb only solution. I don't know that like Archie Miller or somebody else is going to agree to that, but I think it's really interesting.
Can OSU afford that, to pay Doug? Let's say he fills it up, maxes it out. Can they afford to pay Doug $2.6 million?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I like the idea. I just don't know about the practice.
You'd have to do the math on what you're charging for.
Well, and we don't know what kind of treasure chest or, you know, what kind of budget really Mike Holder's working with either.
Well, and that's the thing. That's what we keep saying. Like, they need money. Like, they're losing money. They're bleeding money, whatever. Like, the basketball, you can go look at their past few years of records, and their basketball program is losing money. When they made the tournament 2 years ago, they were one of, I think Darren Revell did a thing, they were one of like five teams in the tournament that were major programs that were losing money. And so that's certainly not gotten better, you know, in the last 2 years. But the question is, how much money is that being subsidized completely by the football program, and probably sufficiently by the football program, because football programs making a lot of money from season tickets, bowl games, whatever. And really, what is the goal here? Like, how much money do you need? Do you have stuff you have to pay off? What are you trying to – how much money are you trying to make from the basketball team?
Yeah, and basketball hasn't been a huge moneymaker anyway.
No, and it's not anywhere in the country other than Kentucky and Duke.
Right, and I think people just assume this $7 million buyout, they have to like write a check like the day they fire Ford for $7 million. That's not how it works. No. Like, they can totally defer that over time, and we've obviously talked about if he gets another job. So I think there's this misnomer that just OSU just can't pay another coach and pay for there's no money. You know, I don't believe that. I think Mike Holder is a master fundraiser. And I think he's got more money than people would think.
Well, and I think what's interesting is, I think there's a sense of like, is Travis Ford having fun right now? Like, is he enjoying this? And if
he looks miserable.
And if the answer is no, which it is, then could you not somehow negotiate and say, hey, we'll give you $3.5 million up front. Let's just end this. Like, you go do something else that's more enjoyable. Would he agree to that? I have no idea. Probably not. Just because. But I feel like there. You could try it. You could try to negotiate. I feel like that is not unprecedented. I can't think of a situation in which it's happened. But I feel like that's not an unreasonable thing to think that could take place.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Could you imagine how that conversation would go?
Yeah, I mean, it's
it's expected to.
Yeah, and it's a business decision. Like I don't know. It would be pretty interesting. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if you saw, I posted a link in the bullets today. Travis Haney is doing a deal on the top ranking the college football coaching jobs.
Mm-hmm.
From I think 1 to 50, or I don't know. I think he's doing all the power fives. Anyway, Oklahoma State, he ranked today as the 30th best job in the country. It was behind Baylor was 22, TCU was like 24, and a couple others that I can't remember were up there. Those were the two Big 12 that I saw ahead of them. Do you think 30th is about the right slot?
I would have to look at the list. Maybe I'm just too close to it, but I thought I would have them in the top 25. Who is 25 through 30? I don't have access to the
story. I'm pulling it up right now. The last year, Oklahoma State was number 25. They were like tied for 25th.
That's about right. So I can't, you know, be upset that it's 30, you know. So
well, and I think his reasoning for dropping them to 30 was just recruiting, and we've talked about this, about how it's been difficult for Gundy to get guys and to recruit, you know, in a way that rivals and ESPN and whoever says is impressive. And so I think that was kind of his reasoning for dropping them.
Yeah. I mean, he's got Nebraska ahead of them. I mean, Nebraska has much better history, but they are completely irrelevant in the Big Ten. And they are, when was the last time they were any good at all? I mean, I don't know. Maybe Virginia Tech, I don't know. I view OSU as a pretty good job considering the facilities, considering the winning they've done. But you're right, it's tough to get kids to go to Stillwater. We've seen that in recruiting. I mean, Mike Gundy can claim that he just picks his 2- and 3-star guys at will, but I think a lot of it has to do with it's hard to get, you know, the 4- and 5-star guys there.
He's got UCLA at 18, by the way. Is UCLA the 18th best job in the country?
I mean, the pool of LA is hard to ignore. I don't know much about the infrastructure. I would question that.
Baylor 22, Wisconsin 24.
Isn't that amazing? Baylor at 22.
Yeah.
You and I growing up, that was not the case.
No, Arkansas 24. Ole Miss at 26 kind of surprised me. I thought they'd be higher. Washington 27, Virginia Tech, Nebraska, and then Oklahoma State. It's pretty interesting. And he ranks these as tier 2 jobs, so regularly contending for conference titles with occasional playoff potential. The problem, I think, is that he's got OSU going in the wrong direction. Like I said, last year they were 25th. They go 10-3, and they dropped to 30th. And I don't know. I was feeling a little bit frustrated the other day because I was looking at recruiting for next year, and it just feels like Oklahoma – I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but it shouldn't feel like Oklahoma State's super competitive, and you have to be to move in the right direction, the direction you want to go on this list.
Well, there's two ways to look at that. You know, one way is, well, they've won like 10 games every year. They won the Big 12 in 2011. They could have won it in 2013. The other way to look at it is they kind of got really lucky with Brandon Whedon and Justin Blackmon. I mean, that doesn't happen every day. It probably won't happen ever again. So you can look at it two ways. Either Gundy's built a sustainable program that will win the Big 12 probably once every 5-6 years. Or you can look at it as, well, they caught lightning in a bottle one time, and they're basically the third or fourth best program in the league.
Yeah.
Which way do you view it?
I think the latter. I think Haney wrote this, and I believe it, that it was more the exception than the rule. 2011.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to win the Big 12. It really is in basketball and football. But when you don't have, like we've talked about, horses, you have so many things have to go your way. The schedule has to break right. OU and Texas both have to be down. You got to have a quarterback. You got to have a defense. It's really difficult.
Yeah, wait till Texas like gets good again, if that ever happens again.
Yeah.
Like remember, you know, when you and I were in school, like that was just an automatic loss every year. Like you went into the year saying, well, we are at least finishing 11-1.
Yeah.
Because there's no chance they're beating Texas.
Yeah.
And now they've been down for so long, and it feels like it's been almost a missed opportunity because you don't feel like they'll be down much longer. I mean, at least you just expect them not to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and, so I think it is. I would agree with Haney that 2011 was an abnormality.
And the thing nobody foresaw with the Big 12 is Baylor and TCU. Like, that has made it so much harder in Texas, whereas that's where OSU's lived. You know, OSU used to get a ton of guys from Houston. Like, that used to be their number one out-of-state place to go, and I feel like they don't get as many guys out of Houston anymore because they either go to Baylor, A&M, or, you know, LSU. So it's the whole Texas thing, which we've talked about before, has completely changed their recruiting and changed the league, really. And it's just, I don't know. You're right. It does feel like the program's moving in a downward trend than upward.
Which is really weird to say after a 10-3 year. I'm not trying to be like, you know, Debbie Downer here, but it just, I don't know. It's interesting to think about, especially as college football, I feel like, continues to grow and get bigger and bigger and become such a, I don't know, it's like the thing now. And I want Oklahoma State to be as good as possible. And it feels like they're not quite reaching where I want it to go, or where it could go, maybe.
Watch Gundy like win the league next year and just stick it to us. Just double birds. You guys were doubting me.
He's going to hold up, instead of the Oklahoman, he's going to print out, he's going to just hold up like an iPad with PFB on it and say, whoever put this podcast out, this is garbage.
Who recorded this podcast? Did you have a question about Gundy, you said, or was it just that about the programs?
It was that about the programs. Should we try our guest again?
Yeah, let's give it another shot.
Should we try to call him?
Yep.
Okay. This is great. Great radio.
Well, I think I should probably introduce him before, you know, it's kind of awkward when I have him on the phone. Like, hey, and this guy did this and this and this. We're calling Josh Fields. You know him. Played quarterback and baseball at Oklahoma State. Broke every record Mike Gundy had when he was in school. We're going to give him a call. He's a busy man nowadays. He's an entrepreneur, so he might be a little busy. Let's give him a shot.
Yeah, let's try it. It's like calling Jacko on the Simmons podcast.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
This is Josh.
Hey, Josh, this is Carson Kyle. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up?
What are you doing? What are you up to?
Not much. Trying to not get fat.
Well,
I'm sorry that you guys saw no caller ID for a little bit and I was getting declined, so sorry about that.
It's all right. Hey, you're on the podcast right now. Do you got a few minutes?
Absolutely.
Just give us an update on what you're doing now in life and with work and everything.
Hey, I am started doing restaurants, so we have about 7 restaurants open right now, a couple Firehouse Subs, and a High Five Pizza, and those are going well. We've opened 2 in a Firehouse and a High Five Pizza in Stillwater. I had to open something in the hometown.
Yeah.
Not very many choices up there anyway, so... I've been doing that, and I just I accepted a job with a team that I played for in Japan to be one of their international scouts over here in the States. So I'm going to scout for the Tokyo Giants. I'm about to head out to spring training and do it this season, and that's it. I'm excited to get around the game again.
Josh, this is Kyle. I'm curious about what the transition was from playing professional baseball to getting into restaurants. How did that happen? How did you get into that?
Well, it happened because during especially in the minor leagues and having to seek out your food places, your food options. Firehouse Subs just became one of the pregame spots for us, and it still is, and it started on the East Coast, and that's where I was, and I just couldn't believe, at that time, Oklahoma didn't have a single one, and one day, I was when I had hip surgery in Phoenix. Phoenix had one, and it was an hour away from where I was training. So I just started craving it, and I drove an hour there and an hour back just to have lunch one day. And I kind of sat down and asked myself, man, if I'm driving an hour just to go have a thing, something's up for this deal. So started getting in, talking to Firehouse, getting in on that. So we started opening kind of toward my last couple years of playing, because I was kind of setting up post-baseball a little bit, or trying to, and we've got that going. And I mean, my college roommate ended up opening one in Racine, Wisconsin, where he lives, and then Jason Arbio. And so kind of a lot of people are getting into Firehouse now.
Josh, where are you right now? It's a little loud. Where are you?
I'm sorry, I can go. I'm in Gold Gym.
Oh, okay. You getting a workout in?
I'm telling you. I told you, I'm trying not to get fat, man.
if you can find somewhere that's a little more quiet, it'd be great.
Yeah, no problem.
But I did want to ask you though about being a scout for a Japanese club. Like, what does that entail? You're going to like Arizona, or how did that come about, and what all will you be doing exactly?
Well, I go to Arizona. I'm going to head out there for 8 days, and then I'm scouting Florida spring training.
Okay.
So I'll be there for the whole month of March for the most part. And then, is it better? Is it a little bit more quiet now?
Oh, yeah, it's perfect. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. I'm doing that, and then basically I'll get to scout Oklahoma City, so it's awesome. I get to, go watch the game, scout the AAA Dodgers team here, and then get to go tuck my kids in, at night, which is a big priority to me. And I'll be traveling on the East Coast quite a bit. So I hit AAA games and big league games on the East Coast for the most part. And, we're just, looking for kind of, it's a select group of guys that kind of fall into what they're looking for. And so I'm excited. They're excited because I played over there. So I know how baseball in Japan is, and I know kind of what they're looking for.
What is baseball in Japan like? It's such a different culture and such a unique thing to go over there. What was that like for you to go over to Japan and play?
It was awesome. We my family loved it. It's super safe, first of all. I was in Tokyo, so one of the biggest cities in the world, if not the, I don't know if Mexico City's there yet, but it was amazing. Just to get to experience the culture. Everything is based on age over there. So, the older you are, the more wisdom that you have and things like that. But baseball it's fun. It's just different, It's, they have Olympic drug testing over there. So you can imagine that there's no, steroids or anything like that you have to worry about in the game. And it's just still old school baseball. You get a runner on first base. They're bunting the guy over to second base, every single time the guy gets on. And there's a lot of one-run games, 2-1, 3-2, and stuff like that. So it's fun. It's a defensive league over there. Americans are brought over to hit home runs, basically. This is our job. They bring, and the American pitchers that come over there are to throw 99 or 100. And that's the expectation. So it was fun. It's a lot of fun.
Going to the major leagues, Josh, you were a first-round pick. You kind of went up and down from AAA to the big leagues. Was it kind of eye-opening just how hard it is to make it in Major League Baseball? Because I went to school with Corey Brown, who was one of the best college baseball players I'd ever seen, and he really had a hard time going from AAA to the majors, back down. Just was that kind of eye-opening, just how tough it is to make it in the big leagues?
It, I would say yes. I'm hoping to scout Corey Brown quite a bit this year. I'm going to try to send as many LSU guys over as I can. So
that works, yeah. Pipeline.
Yeah, that's right. So it was different. And now, that I've gone through different, forms of scouting, training and things like that, I understand a little bit better. And my wife was laughing at me because I was picking my career apart, and I was picking my kind of the player that I was. I was picking that apart the other day, and I understand a little bit more of why there's such. I had more of a, you know, I had one solid year, and then I had more of an up and down journey, and it's because of just, you know, it's hard. I mean, it's a as athletic as you can be, and as good of a player as you could be, when you mix 165 games in a season, and it's a day in day out grind. It becomes, you know, who is the most mentally strong, who can handle that kind of stuff. And you know, I prided myself on being very mentally strong, but man, it's just when you're actually in the thick of it and you're experiencing it, it makes you gain a whole new respect for, you know, that for professional baseball. I wasn't getting obviously sacked and blindsided and hit on a daily basis, but just the mental side of traveling, you know, having to play at 80% when everyone, you know, all the fans expect you to play at 100% every single night, it just, it's tough.
Josh, this is something that I'm always curious about. I think we talked to Brandon Whedon about this, but who is the best player that you've ever played with or against?
Oh, man. There's so many different people that I could classify that into, and I've got into different. Are we talking player? Are you talking athlete? How are we judging this?
Well, I guess I'll break it into two different things. I guess pitcher that you face, who's the best pitcher that you've ever faced? And then who's the best, I guess, athlete that you've ever seen play baseball?
Pitcher, first of all, I'm going to be biased because whoever struck me out the most is going to be the best pitcher I've ever faced. And I think it varies for different players because everyone has their nemesis. But you know, I don't know why, and a lot of people had trouble with this guy, but Mariano Rivera just made me chew on my bat every single time that I faced him. He did that to a lot of people, so that's not hard. But Josh Beckett was another one that just I could not figure out for some reason. And there were some guys that hit Josh Beckett really well. But he was that guy for me that every time I faced him, it was like borderline, should I go tell the manager, you know, hey, you probably could put someone else in that's going to have more success than I'm going to have.
Josh, do you remember the date, September 18th, 2006, what happened that day?
I do. I hit a windblown home run.
In your first career at-bat in the major leagues, you hit a home run.
It was wind-aided, apparently, though.
There was no question. It was windy. I loved Chicago that day for all the wins.
Well, you join a select list of people that hit a home run their first major league at bat. Just what do you remember about that, other than the wind?
It was awesome. You know, I they called me. It was a pinch hit. You know, later on in the game, and I just, you know, I was really confident standing in the on deck circle, but right when I dug into the box, my legs started shaking uncontrollably, and the main thing I was worried about was if I was going to fall over or not, to tell you the truth. And it was, you know, the first pitch was a ball. It was close, and I don't know how I took it, actually, because I was so amped up, but I took the first pitch as a ball, and then, you know, the second pitch that he threw over was what I hit, and I remember the left fielder looked like he was camped under it like three times. He would like look up, and I thought he was going to catch it, and then he would start backpedaling again, and then he looked up like he was going to catch it again and backpedaled. And you know, luckily, like I said, I hit it high enough. I guess that was my skill. I hit it high enough that I played the elements, and the wind carried it out. But it was awesome. You know, I think it was. My wife always got on to me because I didn't show a whole lot of emotion, but it was one of the home runs that I hit that I know I was, you know, I had a huge smile on my face as I was rounding the bases, and I was extremely excited.
That's awesome. I'm curious about What is more difficult? Is it facing major league caliber pitching, or is it going against a top notch defense as a quarterback? Because I think that people kind of look at those two and maybe compare them against each other a little bit sometimes. So which one do you think was more difficult?
Man, I don't know. You know, they both have their different, you know, areas of difficulty. I think baseball is really cool, and I love it so much because of, you know, it's a team sport, but you get to stand out individually, you know, three or four times a game, to where it's just one-on-one with you and the pitcher up there. So, you know, that adds a little bit of extra stress and excitement. I would say difficulty, you know, just knowing that it's you versus him there for three or four times a game, you know. And I would say that, you know, facing that unbelievable defense, it's difficult. I would say that, you know, if you don't have confidence in your teammates around you, you know, for the most part, and hopefully you could ask any of my teammates, but I think dumb enough that I entrusted all of them, you know, a lot, which is why when I did get blindside sacked, I really got blindside sacked, because, you know, there's a lot of trust that you have to put into those guys. So, you know, like I said, it's two different things. My junior year going into OU is one thing that I, you know, specifically remember. And I do know that, you know, it was one of the first times I was actually nervous going into a game. It didn't happen a whole lot, and I was still confident, but, you know, when we ran onto the field and Dan Cody is standing all by himself yelling that he was going to rip my head off, you know, as we're taking the field, there was something that kind of, you know, hit a nerve in my body that said, this might get crazy here.
That was the 52-9 game, wasn't it?
Yeah, they took out some aggression for those
previous 2 years.
Previous 2 years of play.
Yeah, Sam May still talks about Dan Cody screaming at midfield and how terrified he was. But take me back to your freshman year going to Norman. I mean, were you not nervous going into that game, that atmosphere? Or what was the sense like when you came in to relieve Osso Pogai in that 2001 Bedlam game?
Yeah, there was some nerves there. I was young and different things like that. But I think that thing was, I was so young, and the guys, especially the linemen ahead of me, were, I think, redshirt seniors. And, man, I had so much respect for those older guys. You know, we didn't have a lot of wins, but those guys scrapped and played hard. And it was easy for, you know, for me to not really be real nervous because I was young, and they took care of me, made sure that, you know, I didn't necessarily have to worry about too much as far as getting sacked or anything like that, because, you know, even when I got out there, they were leading me a little bit more than I was leading them by saying, hey, let's, we got you. Let's do it. And I think they had more confidence in me during that game than I started out having it myself.
Josh, what do you feel like, as somebody who's obviously a parent, what do you feel like you took away most from your career that you've applied to being a parent and being a dad?
I would just, you know, I thought people might disagree with me and think it's weird or something. But, you know, just...
Buckle your seatbelt, Josh.
Yeah, I got it. Sorry.
You're right.
Yeah, no, it's going to come out weird, first of all. I'm going to let you guys know that first. But just, you know, adversity and getting over it. You know, there's so many times, and I would, you know, confidence. You know, there's so many times when you're a parent, your dad, that you're wondering, you know, am I being, you know, the best dad that I can be, or something like that. Especially, you know, when you're traveling, and things like that, and you come back home, and you definitely want to try to make up for time that you have been gone. And so, you know, the confidence that you got from sports and athletics and things like that, definitely go into that, because it doesn't matter how confident a person you are. Everyone, no matter what your profession is, when you get, when your first child comes out, you are scared to death. you're just like, this is one thing in my life that I don't want to screw up and that I can't screw up. And so, the things that I was able to overcome in football and things like that are a lot of things that you still kind of have to, anxiety and things like that you have to overcome as a parent, just knowing that, as crazy and as hectic as things are getting and stuff, I can handle this, I can handle, my job, I can handle my profession, and I can handle being a parent as well. But I'd say when you marry a good wife and stuff, it makes it a little easier too.
Sure. Josh, when you got to campus, how quickly did you notice that Rashawn Woods was different? Was there a moment that you remember? And like, when did you first realize, whoa, this guy's different than most receivers?
I would say that when we were walking around in the locker room and he had his shirt off and it looked like someone had cranked his skin over his muscles and like cranked it down and just tightened it to the point to where there was no body fat at all. I was like, I don't know if that's normal, if it's gross, but it was apparent immediately. I mean, he was a leader from the get-go. You could tell that. He was just, coming off the good, redshirt freshman year that he had. He was a redshirt sophomore when I was a freshman. It was apparent, right away. I mean, he took leadership. He was, he was the guy that was staying after practice, catching more balls, running more routes. And it's always funny when people ask, oh, all you had to do is throw it up to Rashawn. I was like, yeah, do you think that was stupid? Because it worked out. but also, another reason why was when, when we got in trouble, him and I stayed after practice so much. All 3 years, even my freshman year when I wasn't playing, I would stay, after and throw with him. And when you're, when you have that extra sense of confidence in someone and I knew exactly where he was going to be every single play, no matter what.
Yeah.
From all those hours that we spent after practice working with each other. So, yeah, he was, the my default all the time. I would just, if I ever got in trouble, I started getting rushed or anything, I knew, the one thing that I was confident in is I know Rashawn was going to run his route, and I knew exactly where he was going to be. So yeah, it was an easy choice, when I had to make a choice about him.
Josh, you've had a lot of coaches and managers in your career. Have any of them been crazier or weirder than Les Miles?
Crazier, yes. I don't know about weirder. I still, when I watch that guy give interviews, I'm like, dang! he's a great guy. I mean, the one thing that I've always, said about him, and it goes, I've kind of carried, a learning experience from him over into the business world is, he hired the best assistant coaches that were out on the market. I mean, he paid, he ended up paying him a little bit out of salary when he first got to Oklahoma State. And we had some unbelievable assistant coaches. And so I carried that over, I tried to in the business world. And, we try to hire, my thing is I try to hire people that are smarter than me, which isn't that hard. But, to get people in there that are going to, drive the business and, make it better. And I think Coach Miles did a really, really good job of that. That's one thing I've always given him a lot of credit for. I have never given him credit on doing an unbelievable job of interviewing. That is one thing I just can't give up to him, because there's just so many awkward pauses and different things that he does that it's, it's entertaining. You never know what's going to happen. But yeah, I've had a lot of crazy man. Ozzie Guillen. I mean, I don't know if there's any person that might be crazier than him as far as you know saying what is on his mind. He almost said whatever in an interview. So it was fun playing for him. I always wish that I played for Coach Gundy as a head coach. That was always one of the things. When he got the head job, I was like, man, I would have loved to play for him as a head coach.
Did he razz you at all when you broke all of his passing records?
No, he didn't. He was, I don't know. I think, and hopefully one of these days, that's kind of my goal is I'm getting back in the game, and learning a different side of him, the scouting side. And I think that, I still, my mom's a coach. I think that, maybe coaching could be in my future. I'm not sure, with the seat, what my family wants and stuff like that. But I think when you get to be a coach, pride in knowing, hey, I was able to coach someone into breaking my record. And that's kind of how I felt with Coach Gundy at the time, was that he was, he was more than excited at the, the success that we were building up, the success that we were starting to have, and to know that, he was, if not, a bigger part of it than I was, because he was the one that was calling the plays, allowing me to, break his record.
We'll get you out here on this, Josh. It's not really a question, but I don't think Carson knows this, and I know you don't know it, but I walked on the Oklahoma State baseball team in the fall of 2004. It was right after after your last season, which was spring of 2004. And everybody gets, new gear for the fall and uniforms, hats, cleats, gloves, whatever. Because I was a walk-on, everybody gets new cleats. They went and dug up a pair of used cleats that they had that would fit me. And they were, I believe, your cleats because they had a number 13 on the flap on the front. So I wore your black and white Mizuno cleats for a semester at Oklahoma State. I still had them until like last year. I gave them away, I think. So I appreciate you letting me. Wear those.
No problem. I wish they had a little more luck in them. And they would have served you a little bit better. But yeah, I'm glad. That's one thing, man. You can tell Oklahoma State has definitely, moved up in the world because wearing the old Mizuno contract that we had to, they're in the fresh Nikes and every color. I mean, they got all white Nikes and all that stuff now. It's awesome to see where we've, how far we've come.
Yeah, okay, for sure. Josh, last question here, Josh. Well, let's get you out on this one. You play for Tom Holliday. Josh Holliday's killing it. Just your thoughts on the Holliday family now coaching OSU baseball again and the job that Josh is doing.
And I'm super, super excited. Josh was there as, as an assistant. He just, he played, I think, pro ball 1 year and came back. And he was a huge help to me my whole college career. And I love it. I love every bit about it. I'm so excited. Right when he got the job, I was pumped up because I knew that, he was going to bring back tradition. Tradition was something that, man, those guys – for a couple years, I have nothing but good things to say about Frank, but it's something that Josh brought back right away. That was one of his big goals, was to instantly get back, in touch with alumni, get people back around and excited about OSU baseball, and then he knew he had confidence in himself that he was going to recruit better than, all the other teams out there. So I'm pumped up. I think the one thing, they're having success. They're having a lot of success. To get them on that Omaha level, that national stage year in and year out, we all got to band together and figure out a way to get, the new facilities down there and get them a new stadium and things like that, because that aids in recruiting so much. But they're going to be good. He's going to build it to where they're good year in and year out. I don't see him having, any of those super drop-off years and things like we have there in the past. And it, you know, the thing that I like the most is knowing that if they do, you know, I know for a fact Josh is going to be working his butt off to ensure that if it, you know, if it is a down year, it's not going to happen but one.
Awesome. Josh, hey, thanks for so much for your time, man. We'll have you on again later on in the baseball season. Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. We appreciate it, man.
I'll be skinny by then, so I won't have to be on the treadmill.
Sounds good, man. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Awesome. That was great.
That was great. Yeah.
It was cool. It's so fun to talk to. It's so weird, too, in a way, to talk to these guys that we grew up watching or – I mean, especially him. He was in college I was still in high school. You know, I watched him as a high schooler, and to talk to them now about their lives, what they're doing, you know, what college and being a pro was like is really cool.
You wore his shoes.
I swear I wore his shoes. They were size 13s. I still had them until like a year ago.
Those probably weren't his. They were probably just size 13, so they put a number 13.
No, they numbered their shoes. They were size 13 and number 13.
Okay.
And he got a lot more use out of them than I did, for sure.
No, you're right. And I was in school, I think I was a freshman his last year, and he had a class right next to mine. And remember Classroom Building?
Yep.
Like the most uniquely named, the CLB, the clubhouse is what I called it.
Yeah.
He had a class like right next to mine. I just remember seeing him. I was like, wow, this guy's about to go pro in baseball, and I'm a snot-nosed freshman.
Yep.
His life doesn't suck.
Yeah. He's right, though. You know, the thing about – just talking about how many dudes there are, and I've seen this in covering golf, and I experienced it playing baseball. Like, at some point, all of your talent physically, athletically is very similar. And so then it becomes – Who's tougher mentally? Who believes they're better? Who thinks they're better? And as a result, sort of plays better because of it. Because you get to that top level, and everybody's unbelievable. I mean, the difference athletically and physically is so small.
Well, and I knew he was all Big 12 in baseball and a really good player. But when I looked it up, he was like the 18th overall pick, first round pick.
Yeah,
him and Corey Brown are first round legitimate draft picks.
Corey Brown's the best player I've ever been on the same field with. He was
ridiculous.
He was unbelievable. I pitched against him, and it did not go well for me. but he was just, and you're like, if that dude doesn't make it, and he's played a little, but it's just like, how good are the guys that make it? You know,
he's still in AAA, but he's had stints in the major leagues. But yeah, he was an incredible player. It just shows you how hard it is to make it. I had a bunch of questions that we didn't even get to.
Yeah, I know. I had to cut it short. I'm driving down to a wedding in Austin. And yeah. What were your questions?
Oh, I had a few. Just like growing up in Stillwater, like what that was like and going to college there. Like, you know, most kids like to get out of town. Obviously, OSU's, you know, offered him a chance to play baseball and football there. It was a great deal for him. But yeah. I just wanted to see, like, growing up in Stillwater, is campus something that's foreign, or are you there all the time? You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And, you know, he, like, dislocated, like, his thumb or finger in that 2001 Bedlam game.
Yeah.
Right before he led him down to the win. I wanted to ask him about that and just what was going through his mind, you know, having to put his finger back in place on the field.
I love this story about hitting his first major league home run. I mean, of course you wouldn't forget that, but just the detailed
the guy looking up at it three times was incredible.
That was great. And scouting,
I did my research, Kyle.
That was awesome. I'm like frantically Googling as you're, you know, throwing these questions out here. Because I couldn't remember when his good season was. It was 2007, I believe is what I looked up. He hit 23 home runs, batted .244. 67 RBI. He played in 100 games, so he played a lot. But that was the only time he played more than 80 games in a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So, okay. I got to go. I'm in a wedding this weekend. Did you see the papers that the Ocali put out for the West Virginia game on Saturday?
No, I have not. What are they?
So they always put out a paper that students hold you know, when the other team's coming out on the floor or whatever. And this one said, the end is near, but it's spelled it N-E-E-R, as in Mountaineer. I thought that was maybe a little double entendre there.
Yeah, double entendre, and I don't like any of that. Like, I thought in your column you also made a good point that, you know, these guys are people.
Yep.
They have kids that are on Twitter. Yep. Like, I do.
Oh, their kids are definitely on Twitter.
Yeah, you found that out.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, just no need for that, really. I mean, even if it was unintentional, it's like you got to think about that a little more clearly. And I don't think it was unintentional, but
yeah, I didn't love it.
I don't like, you know, as far as student sections, like you can say whatever you want about people who are paying season tickets, whether they should show up or not. Like, if you're a student, just show up and support the team. Like, you know, you can get on the bring Doug home train once the season's over, but at least support. I feel for the players more than anybody. I really do.
Yeah, for sure. Well, maybe they'll get a win this weekend. So, we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Yeah. Have fun, man. We'll talk to you Tuesday.
Sounds good.